greetings from on the train. So I'm not sure how the class is going to come out today. I do this every week at this time. So, okay, so I'm going to try my best, okay? Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 28. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Dharmatta Kama Mokshamsa Sahopayam Yatamune Natyane Tahate Shu Varayama Satatpavit. Then he described the occupational duties of different orders and statuses of life, citing instances from history,
for he was himself well acquainted with the truth. Purport. Incidents mentioned in the Vedic literature, such as the Puranas, Mahabharata, and Ramayana, are factual historical narrations that took place sometimes in the past, although not in any chronological order. Such historical facts being instructed for ordinary men were sorted without chronological reference. Besides that, they happened on different planets, nay, in different universes, and thus the descriptions and narrations is sometimes measured by three dimensions. We are simply concerned with the instructive lessons of each, even though they are not in order by a limited range of understanding. Bhishma Dev described such narrations before Maharaj Yudhisthira in reply to his different questions. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vansha Kaupa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Putitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I hope this is not too difficult understanding the class on the train, and I hope it's not too noisy, but we're in the part of the Bhagavatam. Technically, it's the story of Maharaj Prickett. As you remember, at the beginning, there were three questions about the origin of the book. And the sages of Namasharanya wanted to know about the main protagonist in the manifestation of the Bhagavatam. And we already discussed two, and now we're discussing Maharaj Prickett. And they wanted to understand something about his life, his birth, his life, and his death. And we're discussing his birth. We're brought to the battle of Kurukshetra at the very end, where Krishna is there to manifest in the womb of his mother. And the Sutta Goswami is bringing us into that particular perspective. And we're just seeing the end of the war, and Krishna is there.
And the narration of Krishna there at the end of the war is actually revealing to us the essence of the book, which is love. The highest thing is love, rasa vai saha. The ultimate reality is an exchange of love between God and those that are part of God. So we're actually seeing that. And one of the narrations at the end of the war is Maharaj Yudhisthira being so distressed because damned if you do, damned if you don't. He was in a particular situation. He was forced to defend his family, but his family was on the other side. And it was a fratricidal war, and he had to take the position of fighting in the war. He wins the war, but he's distressed. And, you know, he wants answers. And one of the most difficult questions is why bad things happen to good people. And probably if there's arguments for the existence of God, actually I'm giving a lecture today in Washington, Can God Be Blue, a Study of Krishna. And one of the most challenging questions will be the existence of evil and to reconcile that with the existence of God. And he's distressed and he goes to his grandfather in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and Krishna is revealing the glory of his devotee, and his grandfather's lying there in a bed of arrows, and he answers the question in a very, 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 very unique way, that ultimate happiness is not the things that move around you. Ultimate happiness is your consciousness. And sometimes the things move around you against your desires to fulfill your desire. In other words, sometimes things move against your will, but they're good for you. And when things move against our will, we call that suffering. But sometimes things move against our will and cause us suffering to actually bring us to a higher level of consciousness and happiness. So that perspective of the world is there. That from a divine perspective, the ultimate goal is your consciousness. Not what happens to you, but how you think. And to change how you think. And to give you the fruit of realization that gives you the tools to think in a higher way. And sometimes to get the fruits of realization, very difficult challenges are given. But when you attain that fruit of realization, then you can put the challenges in the proper perspective. And therefore understand that the challenges, although they cause suffering, they're not with ill intent. And somehow or other he gets this understanding and he gets this perspective and he's relieved. And the arguments and discussions went for many, many levels. But one of the understandings he gets is that as destiny moves, as the world moves around you, the most important thing is to respond properly. That's more important than figuring out why it's moving around you. Because why it's moving around you is actually inconceivable. Because the rectification and the elevation of consciousness is so complex. Even if you look at it in your own life, I'm just reflecting on my own life, how things moved around me. It's how things move around me to elevate me and to deepen your consciousness It's inconceivable that the order that they have to be going in. One realization is a foundation for another realization, and that realization is a foundation for another realization. So, and it's still going on, and who knows how many lifetimes it requires to actually get a clear vision of things. So the most important thing is not destiny, what happens to you. The most important thing is free will in how you react. And therefore, Bhishma Dev is getting to that point. Once he cleared the philosophical doubt of the world moving against our will, not making destiny cruel necessarily, or actually destiny moving against our will. It may move against our will, but it doesn't move. It mean it's moving against our interests. And actually, destiny moves according to our interests. So if you're more interested in your interests than your will is to what? To move things according to your desires with the false conception that that will be happiness. That's not happiness. Happiness is not controlling the world. Happiness is developing love and serving people. And in that consciousness, you become beyond duality. Narayana Prasarve, Nakutas Chanya Bibhyate, Swaga Bhavarga Narake Shu, Api Tul Yatta Darshana. If you actually have that consciousness and your goal is love, and your goal is to develop love, and your goal is to develop service, and your goal is to develop that selfless consciousness of compassion and love, then what's the question of hell? What's the question of heaven? And what is hell and what is heaven? There's a story of one disciple, and he had a guru who was very angry. And the guru wanted to make a fire yajna, so he asked him to get some wood, dry wood that you can scrape together and you can make a fire. The disciple was very sincere. He came back. He couldn't find the wood. So he came back and he told his guru, he said, I couldn't find fire. The guru was so angry, he said, go to hell. The disciple was so sincere, he went to hell. So he goes to hell and he sees people burning. And he says, oh, this is a good place. I could get fire. So he asked Yamaraj, the superintendent of hell, wow, this is great. Can I have some fire? And Yamaraj said, there's no fire here. He said, what do you mean there's no fire here? I see all these people burning. He said, oh, they brought their own fire. So that's the concept, that hell is not so much a destination or place. Hell is a consciousness. And it's the consciousness of selfishness. So once you understand that, that real happiness is selflessness and compassion, then your perspective of the world changes. And the projection on the movement of the world as evil or bad also changes. So once he gets that idea, then his grandfather, Bhishma Dev, he has to now instruct him on what his duty is. And his duty is that he's the king. And so he's instructing him on how to do his duty. And there's just a few points of that. But the point is here, it explains too, that he cites instances from history. History is called itihasu, in the histories. So here a very interesting point is that there's a different view of history from a viewpoint. Every book has what's called a sambandhi. A sambandhi means what's the relationship of the book to what you're trying to, what your intention is. Really, what's the relationship of your book to truth? So, in terms of the Bhagavatam and spiritual books, the objective is particular lessons. There's particular lessons that are given. There's not a concern for history. I mean, history in terms of, especially when you look at the perspective of secular development and multi-universes and so many things and other dimensions, you know, that this life and this concept we have of history is not the all in all, then what's not important is the chronology, but it's the instructions. So there may be discrepancies in chronology. And in fact, you can imagine great sages writing, they're not concerned with chronology. They're concerned with the message. One time I had this old Indian man, he told me that actually what history is the people are true, but the message is made up. And he said, what fiction is that the names are made up, but the message is true. And I can't say that's exact, but, you know, who knows exactly what history is in terms of the facts of history. You know, and people debate about the facts of history. And the facts of history, what is the real meaning of that? What's more important is the message of history. And you can imagine great sages who are compiling these books, they don't really care for the chronology. They're simply concerned, it says, with the instructive incidences. So that's what they're concerned is. You know, there was one thing, I forgot this in the... and specifically, you know, there's criteria. Because learning is based on certain trust or faith. So what gives you faith? Well, there's criteria that something is authentic. So if you have a Purana, if it's a history, a spiritual history is called the Purana, then there are certain things that authenticate it. And different factors. And one of them, they all, authentic history has to describe the lineage of kings. You know, the Bhagavatam has 10 subject matters. Atthasagas, Dasagas, Chas, the Tear Potion of Bhutaya, Mandatara, Ishakanta, Narodha, Mukta, Asaya. It has to have, it has to have, a Purana has to have lineages of kings. But what was the purpose of describing the lineages of the kings? Because what a spiritual history wants to show you is that happiness is consciousness, not the things that you have. It doesn't mean that you can't possess things. And that we don't have needs, because a lot of the spiritual text is about how to fulfill your needs. But the idea is the goal is not the needs, because your needs don't make you happy. It's how you think about things make you happy. In fact, happiness is contentment. So if you have a little and you're satisfied, then you're happy. So... and if you're in the mood of simply collecting things, atyahara, over-collecting, the more you get, the more you become attached. The more you become attached, the more you want. And that's the destruction of...
I hope that this going back and forth is not too difficult with the... You know, I'll try to make it better, but it's just a fact. That's why a simple life and high thinking is so powerful. Because if your objective is just things, the more things you get, the more attachment develops in your heart. The more things you have, the more attachment, and it never ends.
and therefore people want to be president, therefore people want to take, they want to be president, then they're not satisfied, then they want to be conquerors of the world, you know, and then they're not satisfied. You know, I told you, I know this one, I may have told this story before, but I knew this one lady who was married to a Russian oligarch and billionaire. And she told me that he was, even though he was from a Jewish family, he was funding Muslim rebels because one of the biggest businesses is to have arms, to have military things. And even though he had billions and billions of dollars, he was still trying to get more money. So why was he trying to get more money? Because desire means more. And the phenomena, actually, if Mahamuni was on that, I was talking about him, that to him, we were discussing, that we see married people, the tendency is, and I never could figure out, you know, maybe they, at the beginning they're struggling. And then they get a job and they make three times as much money and they're still struggling. And then they get a raise and they're still struggling. Because the tendency is, once you get more things, is to always want more. And that's why Eric Fromm, the German sociologist, when he talked about freedom, he talked about freedom from want. Not freedom. Freedom too is wonderful. But you also have to have freedom from. So this kind of objective will destroy your desire for love and devotion. It will destroy others. It will destroy the world. And one of the main things about spiritual texts is to actually discourage this. To that one who is intelligent, he doesn't have this objective. His objective is to take care of his needs, and he makes an effort. He works 9 to 5, whatever he gets, enough. Because it never ends. So, spiritual histories are trying to discourage this, and therefore they must always describe the kings, because the kings are the people who have the most opulence, the most power, the most sex life, the most, they have everything. And if you study the history of people who have power, you'll see they're just as miserable as you or even more. So therefore, as the king, he's going to study these spiritual histories to inculcate this message in himself. Because if you get power and you don't inculcate this message yourself, you will abuse power. That's why the first verse of the Upadeshamrita says, Vacha Vegam Manasakrota Vegam Jiva Vegam Udrapasta Vegam. That one who controls the senses is qualified to make disciples all over the world. What makes him qualified? Because if you control yourself, you won't get carried away with the power of having followers. And we see even the history of ISKCON. You know, initially I thought it was like rock stars, you know, 11 people were gurus, oh, how fortunate they were. But we see that actually that's not fortune, that they were given positions of power. Because it led to so much anxiety for themselves when they weren't Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, or they were struggling with that, then there were so many challenges. And so, anyway, this is the spiritual history of kings. If maybe, you know, I'm trying to give something today in this kind of situation, so let me do one more thing, and then I'll just read one more verse. When Bhishma Dev was describing occupational duties, the sun's course ran into the northern hemisphere. This period is desired by mystics who die at their will. Wow. The perfect yogis or mystics can leave the material body at their own sweet will at a suitable time and go to a suitable planet desired by them. In Bhagavad Gita 8.24, it is said that realized souls who have exactly identified themselves with the interest of the Supreme Lord can generally leave the material body during the time of the fire god's effulgence and when the sun is in the northern hemisphere and thus achieve the transcendental sky. In the Vedas, these times are considered auspicious for quitting the body. They take advantage of by the expert mystics who have perfected the system. Perfection of yoga means attainment of such super mental states as to be able to leave the material body as desired. Yogis can also reach any planet within no time without a material vehicle. The yogis can reach the highest planetary system within a very short time, and this is impossible for them by the materialists. Even attempting to reach the highest planet will take millions of years at a speed of millions of miles per hour. This is a different science, and Bhishma Dev knew very well how to utilize it. He was just waiting for the suitable moment to quit his material body, and the golden opportunity arrived when he was instructing his noble grandsons, the Pandavas. He thus prepared himself to quit his body before the exalted Lord Krishna, the pious Pandavas, and the great sages headed by Bhagavan, Vyasa, and all great souls. So, leaving the body is, it's a crucial point because the gross body is a product of the subtle body. Yam yam vapi svaram bhavam tachantyante kalevram tantamevaiti kanteya siddhata bhavam. Whatever you're thinking at the time of death, to that nature you go. And it's not just thinking, it's your mood. It's your consciousness. Actually, in the Yoga Sutras, the description of death or the concept behind it is really, it's frightening in one sense. Because what's the false ego, the ahankara? It's a material element. It's kind of like a funnel that delimits consciousness. It's a funnel that delimits consciousness to a particular body. So at the end of life, according to our karmas, according to our desires, then we enter into another thing. Kate, are you going now? Okay. Yeah, let me take that out so you... Okay, all the best to you, and I really appreciate it, because I was worried when I came here how I would be able to give the class. Thank you. Yeah, I didn't know how to give the class because somebody had to be sitting next to me. Okay. Anybody can remind what I was talking about? I just have to say goodbye to the person next to me.
You said you wanted to be reminded about what you were talking about?
I was talking about what?
Delimiting the consciousness means delimited.
Oh, yeah. That's what false I ego delimits the consciousness to identify with a particular body, to have a particular experience that you need to go to the next, that you need in your evolution. With the objective of, eventually awakening the soul. That's what the whole world is about. So that's what the whole world is about, eventually awakening the soul. And so the moment of death is such a crucial moment because your volition and will is a major factor in the destination that you go. Because what Krishna is deciding is what's the next best destination for you, how much suffering you require and how much happiness you require, and what type of bodily experience you require. So, you know, there's the law of karma, and there's your desires, and there's an absolute reality, God, who actually decides this. So it's crucial. So here we have the example of Bhishma Dev, knowing it's crucial, using the knowledge of the Vedas to take advantage of a particular time, a particular situation, to facilitate the manifestation of consciousness to deserve, you know, a better destiny. To deserve a better destiny. So,
good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, the next stop before a train, 79 in Paris, India, will be dead on Baltimore. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, the next stop before a train, 79 in Paris, India, will be dead on Baltimore. If Baltimore is your destination, ladies and gentlemen, please gather all your belongings at this time and take the only way you can get back to the All doors are now open in Baltimore. We are open to Baltimore.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, you know, a few challenges, but I somehow or other, I schedule it so I actually can give class. Anyway, so it's, you know, that's why the eighth chapter, this whole chapter called Attaining the Supreme, the whole chapter in the Gita, because it's important, that junction. And therefore, I wrote something called Enternet about the internet. Because if you want to know what you'll think at the time of death, then just check what you dream. Because what your dreams are is when your consciousness or buddhi can't select what comes to the front of your consciousness. So at the time of death, it says whatever you think, whatever you think won't be based on your mental willpower. It'll be based on the impulses in your consciousness. So a spiritual person is very, very concerned. A spiritual person is very, very concerned with what they put in. And I can tell you, being 65 and knowing that, you know, it's really announcing now that where have all these years gone and the future, where will they all go? That, you know, what I put in is so important. So Bhishma Dev's life shows that there's some preparation, because your preparation will inform your destination. Okay. Because of the medium of being on the train, that's about the best my brain can work. But I will entertain any questions. Are there any questions? Okay. Would anyone else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Anybody?
I'm somebody
Hare
who's
Krishna
listening.
Maharaj. This is Malati.
Malati?
Yes. Hare Bol.
Malati, how are you doing? I was thinking of you the other day.
Oh, thank you. I've been thinking of you a lot. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. My due date is tomorrow. So, no baby
you
yet.
What? You what is?
My due date is tomorrow.
Okay. Everyone on the phone, please wish Malati all success. So, we offer our prayers for you, okay? And I had meant
Maharaj.
To call. Hey, I meant to call you because, okay. Well, it's nice to hear your voice and that you're well. Okay. Thank you. It's funny, too, because, you know, I'm on a train, so I'm actually drove by Wilmington, Delaware. And that's one of the stops. Okay. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
I'm just waiting for that Hare Krishna from both of you. Thank you.
Oh, Jai.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Anyway, we did our best today, and thank you very much. I should call to do this because it's in the day, which I think is going to be.